This week on Straight Talk Africa, President-elect Donald Trump is staffing his administration for his second term in the White House.
Nothing will stop me from keeping my word to you, the people. We will make America safe, strong, prosperous, powerful, and free again.
Thousands of positions have to be filled for his second term in office, which begins January 20th, 2025, after he is sworn in. The appointees will mirror the direction his administration will take on domestic and foreign policy issues. How will the new Trump administration likely shape the U.S. policy towards Africa? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCory. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is scheduled to meet Wednesday with President Joe Biden for a traditional post-election meeting in the Oval Office. Their meeting marks the beginning of a peaceful transfer of power that is a pillar of America's democracy. The transition from one administration to another is complex. With us to discuss the intricacies of presidential transitions is VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Steve was the White House Bureau Chief during the first Trump administration from 2017 to 2021. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Steve. Pleasure to be back, Vincent.
Yes. Now, the transition period baffles many people in other countries. We know that for example, an election happened in Botswana just a few weeks ago. The next week, the president was inaugurated and, you know, life continues. Now, why does it take how many days, up to 76 days for the next president to be sworn in?
Yes, it is kind of unusual compared to a lot of countries that it is such a long period. And of course, what this means is that the current administration, although it knows it's going to be totally out of power come January 20th, still controls the levers of government. And of course, when we're talking about going from the Democrats to Republicans, Biden to Trump, there could be some very quick reversals of things that even this current government might do in the last couple of months that it's still in power.
Yes. We did mention, in fact, positions that have to be filled. Some of them are political appointees. You know, sometimes people think of just the cabinet, but they're in the thousands. What does that mean? Who are these people?
There's actually something called the Plum Book, which has the thousands of jobs. And Donald Trump has made it very clear that the most important thing for placing people in these jobs is not necessarily going to be experience or competency, but loyalty. Very much like we saw in 19th century America, when these jobs were essentially patronage. You supported the president, you got a job in the government, which is the case in a lot of countries, as we know. Mm-hmm. But it's been the case in the United States. It's more about competency.
Yes. Now, there is another aspect of the election that people never realize. It's actually what perhaps led to a situation we saw in the last period of transition, January 6th. But it's to do with the electors that right. about December 17th, there is a process that needs to take place just before the president is confirmed as the president.
This is always ceremonial, and I'm sure you've explained on the show many times that actually in the United States, it's not the popular vote that elects the president, but the electors based on the population of the states indirectly. So you can lose the popular vote and win the electoral vote. Now, this was always very much a routine, symbolic process until what happened 4 years ago, when Donald Trump, who lost to Joe Biden, did not concede and talked about using all sorts of extraordinary and, according to many lawyers, illegal measures to try to overturn the results of the Electoral College. Yeah. We're not going to see that this time around, Vincent, because the Democrats are not challenging this. Yeah. Kamala Harris has conceded. As you mentioned, there's the meeting that occurred today between Joe Biden and Donald Trump in the Oval Office, which really symbolizes the peaceful transfer of power. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there are other aspects of the transition that perhaps people need to know that the process actually begins way before, even just before the elections are over, by both teams. So there's a transition team on the side of the outgoing administration, and there's a transition team on the incoming.
Correct. So what happens is this transition team for the incoming presidency will go to the different departments and bureaus and offices to familiarize themselves with that department. And essentially, they're able to look under the hood, but they're not able to drive the car, turn the key until the new president is there. But it's going to be very different than 4 years ago, where the Trump administration took a long time to get up to speed. This time around, they're very much more prepared. And as I've heard it described, they're going to move fast and break things.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the foreign policy and other policies, even including those that impact people locally, what typically happens around this time when there's a transition between a Democratic administration to a Republican administration? What can change? What can shift? What could stay the same for some time?
Well, I think especially in regards to both some of the domestic policies that have been very controversial here, such as the issue of immigration, border control. Also, we had something in the United States, this big Inflation Reduction Act, which was a lot of money going out for, say, silicon plant manufacturing. A lot of that money is unspent. So we could see a move by the Biden administration to spend a lot of money very quickly, also perhaps to sign some executive orders. Which Donald Trump, as he has said on day one, he may be reversing a lot of these.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes the president, also the outgoing president, is described as a lame duck president.
Right. But he's a lame duck. But until January 20th at 12 noon, he is still the president of the United States, the commander in chief, and still retains the sweeping official executive powers.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Lim, maybe just so you can help us understand, traditionally on the 20th, January 20th, when the swearing in happens, what happens at that time in terms of the two leaders, one who's outgoing and one is incoming?
Well, we'll see outside the U.S. Capitol, there will be a ceremony. And it didn't happen 4 years ago. I was actually on Air Force One as it left Andrews Base and flew down to Florida. But usually the outgoing president is standing right there, right? Mm-hmm. To again, emphasize this peaceful transfer of power. Mm-hmm. And we can expect this time around that Joe Biden will be there to watch Donald Trump being sworn in as the 47th president, making history as only the second president in U.S. history to have been elected in non-consecutive terms.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Steve, for your insights. Steve Herman is VOA's chief national correspondent. It's time now for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the second administration of President-elect Donald Trump and the level of engagement with Africa and the world. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Emotional roller coaster of adjusting to their new role to coping with sleep deprivation and exhaustion, new mothers navigate numerous hurdles that can leave them feeling overwhelmed and uncertain. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will discuss significant changes in the postpartum period and why postpartum care is important for mothers. We will also talk to experts about what can help shape a positive postnatal experience for women, babies, and families. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. You're with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. We're discussing how President-elect Donald Trump's second term in office will change U.S. foreign policy and what will be the level of engagement with Africa. With me in studio is national security law and foreign policy expert Johanna LeBlanc, and visiting researcher at the Lasky Center for Transatlantic Studies at Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich, and Michael Walsh. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa to both of you. Now, I want to start with, let me start with Europe. You've been over there, you're observing what's going on, and we know that the transition is happening at a time when there's war in Europe. There's the Russia-Ukraine situation, and President-elect Trump said he will end this quickly. So what are we likely to observe happening in Europe and also in relation with NATO and the engagement of the U.S.?
I mean, I think when you look at NATO, you've had NATO come out publicly, you know, leadership figures saying that, you know, NATO still matters, NATO is still important, NATO is going to be a commitment of the United States. But we have to wait and see what Trump does when he comes into office. I think within Europe as a whole, as you travel around Europe, there's a divergence of opinion, just like there's a divergence of opinion in the United States. And when you're in Eastern Europe, when you're in the Balkans, you hear a lot more of, we want Trump as the president of the United States because he will bring peace. And so I think that's interesting. I think a lot of people are shocked when they hear that because they think all Europeans wanted Biden, but that's actually not the case. I think for Germany, it's a very big deal, the election, the outcome of the election, because it really destabilizes potentially the relationship that Biden has built, and we'll see what happens from here.
And, you know, Johanna, not long ago, you were in Africa, you've traveled across the continent. Interestingly, too, people sometimes make assumptions that in Africa, people have a preference for a particular, a party. But you'd be surprised. What did you hear when you were there in terms of what kind of expectations they have with a Trump administration in African countries?
Well, what I'm hearing on the ground is that there's a much more preference for a Trump presidency than a Harris presidency for different reasons. One of them is that the United States tend to impose its values on African nations. Like, for example, we saw Uganda was removed from AGOA because of anti-LGBTQI plus legislation that President Museveni passed into law. I think African countries are, in a way, not necessarily interested in the United States lecturing them as to how to address social issues in their various countries. I think they're more concerned about issues around trade and investments, which are the real policies that will bring about economic stability to those various countries, We saw that China recently committed $50 billion to the African continent to strengthen its ties with various countries. And I think that African nations are looking for more of collaboration with the United States around trade and investments, and less so on human rights issues and civil rights issues. Yeah.
And we'll talk a bit more about what was lost in the last 4 years, possibly. We have had some diplomats, former and current, saying that a lot of ground was lost and that China has gained quite some influence when you talk about soft kind of diplomacy. But Michael, also in terms of the just a general foreign engagement, we have the Middle East is a situation also happening. So President Trump is coming in to deal with two crises, at least in the, if you add Sudan to that, is that three?
And Congo, Eastern and Congo.
In terms of the last 4 years, now there's been that observation that there are quite a number of, things that were lost in terms of the level of engagement. What happened? What could have happened that undermined that level of engagement where you saw Russia gain more influence, like in the Sahel region, where people lacked confidence in President Biden's ability to resolve the Middle East crisis, for example? And what can change or what could potentially change in terms of those areas?
I mean, there's so many variables, right? When you look back at the last 4 years, obviously the shift in Europe's focus towards Eastern Europe and France moving out of the Sahel region as a dominant player has created a vacuum. The Abraham Accords with the Trump administration put into effect did change, and I talked about this a few days ago. It changed the security architecture of the greater Middle East, not just the Middle East. So when we look at the greater Middle East, we push the whole way into North Africa, we push into Sahel. So you have the UAE, you have Morocco, you have Israel in this relationship, Bahrain as well, where there's security provisions as part of that agreement. It's not just a recognition of diplomatic relations. That changes things. And that change, I think it kind of tied the hands of the Biden administration a little bit too as to what they could do on things like Western Sahara. And so when you look at the Trump administration coming in, I talk about the forest fires. You don't focus on one fire. And if you're an administration that's results-oriented, like the Trump administration was, we should expect the same thing to happen this time around. They're going to look and they're going to say, hey, there's all these trees on fire. What are the low-hanging fruits? Which are the ones we can go in and we can show results quickly in the first 100 days? And I think that's what they're going to focus on. And I think that's a smart strategy because that's how you demonstrate performance. And I think that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And Johanna, some have observed that, especially across the continent, that they need leadership in the West, especially that will hold African leaders accountable in the sense that some have had lost opportunities just because they either mismanaged their countries or are unable even to resolve their own issues because they expect someone in, excuse me, in the West to take charge or to kind of always kind of have their back. And they would see an administration that puts that pressure on them to take charge as more beneficial to the African people than patronage.
Yeah, as we know, Mr. Trump is an isolationist. He's an interventionist, and he's a protectionist. So if African leaders or the citizens of various countries are looking for this administration to apply pressure on their governments to take certain actions around governance and human rights issues, I think those folks are sadly mistaken. As I said earlier, I think that this administration will be focused on other things. We saw under the previous Trump administration, there was a great deal of money spent in Prosper Africa. We saw that the U.S. Development Finance Corporation was actually revamped under him. It was called OPIC before. And with the revamping, what he did was he removed the nexus between a company in the United States, whereas if you are a company seeking to secure debt financing for a project in an emerging market, you needed to have a nexus with the United States, where under his administration, that nexus was removed to make it easier for businesses to secure debt financing. And also, too, when you look at AGOA, I think that if AGOA is not renewed during the lame duck session, it would be renewed under a Trump administration. As we know, The Republicans have gained both the House and the Senate. And I think it's an opportunity for African governments to lobby to remove some of the conditions that are attached to AGOA, in particular, some of the human rights conditions, and also to lobby to ensure that AGOA does not undermine the implementation of the AFCFTA, but also support it.
Mm-hmm. Michael, there has been, of course, that issue that President-elect now Trump brought up about the European members of the NATO contributing at least 2% of their GDP to NATO, and that was a big issue for him. Up to this point, it looks like some countries have not managed to do that. So what stops them, what prevents them, and what could that now be, mean for them when President Trump now comes back?
So the first Trump administration, if you look at their Africa strategy, they emphasized key regional partners that align with our strategic interests. So we're talking major countries, either major economies or major security partners or major political actors. So they focused on the big hitters in regions. That's where they wanted to focus. And so when you look at NATO or you look at Africa or you look at the Middle East, you know, the Trump administration looks at it from the perspective of who here can influence the region? Who can take over some of this responsibility? Who's willing to do it? So they want to focus on the responsible regional stakeholders. And those are large countries who can actually do it. And so that's where they focus. And I think they're going to focus on that the second administration as well, whether it's in Africa or the Middle East or in Europe. So the question is going to be for all of these countries is how do you actually get yourself conceptualized or perceived in the minds of the Trump administration that you're one of these responsible regional stakeholders? And one of the criteria for the European countries, obviously, and he said it over and over again, is that he wants this percentage of your budget going to defense. And the countries that do that and are willing to do that and are also countries that are large enough to influence the course of events in the region and take responsibility for events in the region are the ones they're going to focus on.
Yes. Now, and this for both of you, Johanna, we have seen Russia gain quite some influence in Northern Africa in trying to push quite in some other areas. And, of course, we've talked about soft diplomacy, China getting extremely popular right now on the continent of Africa. What would it take now for the second Trump administration to regain back some of that? We know that the U.S., for example, lost the base in Niger, which is a spy base for the U.S. But then now this has been lost for quite a while now. We have a waning influence of the U.S. in Africa. What would it take now?
Yeah, and you are correct. I think the U.S. Has not done its part in strengthening bilateral and trade relations with the African continent, which left a power vacuum. And that is why you see countries like China and Russia continue to expand their footprints across the African continent. We know that China is one of Africa's number one trading partners and has been for the past 10 years. But I think that there's still some opportunities. So I think that under the Trump administration, there needs to be more engagement with African leaders. And we need to look at the African continent, not just in a sense of critical minerals, not just in a sense of security interest. Obviously, international relations, it's all about interest. But we also need to look at the African continent as a key player when it comes to the United States maintaining its superpower through the United Nations. We need the African continent for certain votes. And we also need to look at the African continent strategically because of its geographical location. We look at the Red Sea, which is a major passage for various trade activities, right? More strategic engagement. Two, focusing primarily on trade and investments on the country. And three, making sure that policies coming out of Washington are mutually beneficial, not just for the United States, but also African governments. But it's going to require that African governments take the leadership in ensuring that what happens in Washington actually reflect the reality on the ground and what is needed in their respective countries.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, anything you want to add on to that particular aspect?
I mean, autonomy. I mean, the Trump administration wants countries to not be dependent on Russia and China economically, politically, security-wise. These are countries like South Africa, Algeria, Ethiopia. These are the countries of concern to a Trump administration. So they want to see these countries move into a more independent economic, political, security environment. Whether they can do that, I mean, they're not going to be able to do it with all the countries. And so that's going to lead the opportunity for conflict and competition. And so there's going to be a mixture of both. But I think as we move into the inauguration, there's a window for the next 2 months for countries to signal where they're moving, what they want to do. And for the larger countries on the continent, the larger countries in the Middle East, the larger countries in Southeast Asia, these parts of the world where there's potential for conflict with Russia and China and Iran, North Korea, there's an opportunity for them to signal that they want to either play or compete.
Yeah. So how about, is it the approach thing? Because the relationship between the U.S. and the adversaries remains the same. But how to deal with them? I mean, Michael, if I may stay with you, President-elect Trump said he has a way of dealing with Russia, that if he was in charge, for example, the war in Ukraine probably could not have happened. But at the same time, we know that Russia is in competition with the United States. Mm-hmm. So what dynamics change here, or rather that do those dynamics of political transition change how U.S. is going to deal with Russia? And will it be better?
It's always easy to have alternative futures when you don't actually have to do them. They're in your mind, right? And so the Trump administration can say that Trump has a relationship with Xi or he has a relationship with Putin. It's different. But in reality, what would have happened on the day that Russia invaded Ukraine? None of us know. If the Trump administration was in office, you know, would they have done something to be more hostile from day one? And how would that have led to the ladder of escalation with Russia? We don't know any of that. And so I think it's easy when you're on the outside and coming in and the other administration had the football at the time to say we would have done it differently. It would have turned out a lot better. So I think that one of the things about the Trump administration is, you know, he is the face of the administration. He is the voice of the administration. He is the one who's out with the leaders. It's a leadership-driven engagement. So our relations with Russia, our relations with China, our relations with North Korea is going to have a lot to do with his relations with those leaders. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different shift because, as you know, Biden, a lot of the times, he had presidential visits that didn't happen. And that was disappointing to leaders in Africa and the Pacific and other parts of the world.
Okay.
Trump follows through on his things.
Yeah. Now, very quickly, actually, what do you think this does to, for example, the relationship between the U.S. and Kenya in relation to the peacekeeping in Haiti?
As I said earlier, Trump is an interventionist.
Yeah.
And we saw that the Republicans in Congress had major concerns about this mission. So I think under a Trump administration, the mission will probably lean over to a UN peacekeeping versus U.S. financing a mission.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We have to leave it right here. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Johanna LeBlanc, national security law and foreign policy expert, and Michael Walsh, a visiting researcher at the Alaska Center for Transatlantic Studies at Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich. Thanks to affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. Check out Straight Talk Africa on social media. Like us on Facebook, follow us on X, watch us also on YouTube, and let us know what you think. I'll see you next time.